Welcome to the Highly Sensitive Healing Podcast, where we meet the joys and challenges of our sensitivity with open minds and hearts to awaken our best highly sensitive selves. Welcome back, my highly sensitive friends. Tanya here, and this week we're concluding our chat with Amber McCormick. Amber is a fellow HSP and nature-based life coach who is passionate about nature and human connection. If you missed part one, take the time to listen so you can hear more about Amber and her journey. There's a link in the show notes. So you work with your clients on something that you call parts work. So can you tell us what parts work is and what it's about and how it's maybe especially helpful for us as highly sensitive people?
Yeah. So parts work was something I hadn't heard of before this training program that I went through. We were trained in a bunch of different tools and modalities. And when I learned about parts work, this really resonated with me. If you've ever said, you know, part of me feels this way, but part of me feels this way, you're experiencing a conflicting parts within yourself. And so we're all made up of these various parts, which they've studied a little bit in neuroscience, which it's actually these neurocircuits in our brains. So our brain wants to run efficiently. So we have these circuits that are these different parts, and each one kind of has its own personality, its own purpose, its own desires. And then all of those parts put together is what makes up our full personality and who we are. And what can happen is if we're not conscious of these parts, one part can take over the whole system. And so that's not really indicative of our goals. It's just this one part that's really dominant usually and is kind of running the show. And that can lead to, you know, self-sabotaging behaviors, reacting in ways that, you know, we wish maybe we hadn't reacted that way. But in parts work, what we do is we operate from a place of soul or true self. People have different terms that resonate with them. And so we actually learn to tap into soul, which nature and sit spot and some of the other practices really help us to quickly drop into that place. So we drop into soul, and then we can work with each part through soul and get an understanding of them. And so the goal is, instead of the parts running the show unconsciously, right? We're not conscious of what's going on internally. Things are just, I think of it as like a family or something, right? With all these kids having their own thing and they're all just running around, and the parent kind of being the anchor who's actually the one making decisions for the direction that the family's going. excuse me. So when we tap into soul, we can start intentionally running our lives from soul. So it's creating a soul-directed life. And through understanding these parts, we start to understand why we do certain things that we do. And sometimes the parts maybe need a little bit of healing because we've hated them, you know, or somebody else has sent them messages that they're not okay, or we've suppressed them. And then other times, you know, maybe it's something that doesn't serve us anymore. So I have a part that's really rooted in like perfectionism. And when I was doing my own work with parts work, I actually did what's called repurposing, and I repurposed that part because it's really valuable to me. It's the part that polishes my work and makes things a quality product. The problem is if it's in a perfectionist state, it's never going to be done. So I worked on repurposing that part to be something that's more of I come in and I kind of put the final details on it. And then that part's job is to be quiet again. And so getting to know all of these parts helps us get to this place of radical self-acceptance. And I think for HSPs, you know, we grow up hearing, and still, you know, even as adults, it's constant messages that we're too sensitive. We need too much quiet time. We should be more extroverted. We shouldn't feel so deeply. Why are we worked up about that thing? We can't do anything about it. You know, all these messages from people who don't understand us. And if we let those into our system, you know, that's really going to affect us. So learning our parts can really get us to that place of radical self-acceptance, so we can get our system working for us instead of against us. It's kind of a different thing. So hopefully that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. It sounds like a true grounding practice, you know, just something to bring you back to the essence of who you are. Like you said, you know, whatever you want to call it, soul, anything that you want to put in, if you have to put a name on it. So no, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Once you start learning about these parts and understanding them, your brain just processes it kind of on their own. So, you know, I might be driving somewhere and I'll be like, oh, wow, this part's really activated right now. What's going on? And it allows me to kind of do my own processing in a way that in the past I would have needed a coach or a therapist or somebody to help me with. And if you have people close to you who are also versed in parts work, it can be helpful during conflict, because you could say like, oh, my protector part or whatever you're naming it is really activated right now. You know, this is what's going on for me. And it just helps us communicate and understand ourselves and others in a much deeper way that really makes sense. And there's a bunch of different types of parts work out there. I do want to mention that, because some people might have heard of like internal family systems, and I know there's some others, and they're all similar, but a little bit different. And what I really love about this process that I was trained in is it's very adaptable. So we're not all the same. We don't all have the same parts. There's a few parts that we all have, you know, some part has to kind of regulate our daily activities. And, you know, there's pretty much everybody has an inner child part. But aside from that, it's really what you're noticing in your system. And that's what is really powerful to me, is it just has this flexibility to it, for us to really be able to access our authentic self that's unique in a way that's different from everybody else.
Yeah. And it's about building awareness too, right? Self-awareness. So you, like you said, you're driving somewhere and you're noticing something about yourself, and instead of reacting to it, you're just responding to it as, this is part of myself. I can recognize it and kind of separate myself from it for a mental health tool.
Yeah. And something I do want to mention here that just occurred to me is, when people first learn about parts work, they get a little bit nervous. It's not like a multiple personality disorder or anything. Although when you start learning about it, it does kind of feel that way, but it's just these parts of you that are true. They're parts of you who always been there. And it's funny too, because I've also had these moments of like maybe being in a shower and planning my day. And it's like, okay, this part, it's almost like a board meeting. Okay, I need you to do this today, and you're going to do this. And I really don't need your help today. So if you could quiet down, that would be great. You know, and it's just this reorganizing of the system. And there's some, there are some other ways that we work with it too, where there's a daily practice where you can do what's called a mandala and move these sticky notes around that have your parts. So you can really get a visual of, these are the parts that I really need today, and these ones I kind of need to be quiet. And what's interesting with that is, you wouldn't think that moving these little sticky notes, either on the computer or, you know, in front of you, but it totally realigns your system for the day. And I found that to be incredibly powerful and a really quick, easy way to get myself in the mindset that I need for where I'm headed for the day, if that makes any sense. Or maybe at noon I have a change and I'm going from work mode to mom mode, you know, and okay, so how do I need to shift? And something about that externalization of it is so helpful.
Even though it sounds amazing.
It's very interesting. And it's hard to explain until you've experienced it too. Mm-hmm. So hopefully it's making sense to people who haven't heard of it before.
No, it makes perfect sense to me. It sounds like amazing work. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to be really interested to learn more about that. I do have a question for you about grieving. So, and this is something that I've experienced myself personally as well, but I'd like you to talk a little bit about nature and how it can help us through the grieving process. And if someone is actually currently grieving a loss, whatever that loss may be, what's some advice you would give them that they could use today if they're really needing help?
Yeah, so nature and grief can be really tricky because it's different for all of us, and it can be so many different things, from, you know, the loss of a loved one or loss of, you know, how we thought our life was going to be. You know, I think as HSPs, we maybe even go through a little bit of grief when we learn about our sensitivity, because, you know, especially those of us who grew up not having the support around it, right? You know, kind of this, like, what would it have been if I had known about this as a kid, or I had people who could have supported me in helpful ways. And so grief takes a lot of different forms, and it's very personal. So, you know, first and foremost, you know, just being aware of what your own personal needs are, and listening to that, because our body knows so much more than anybody outside of us. But the big thing is that nature is always there. And so people, you know, I think that this is one of the things that gets me going a little bit, is, you know, a lot of people have a hard time with holding space or empathy or responding in helpful ways, especially around grief. And it's not necessarily that they don't have good intentions or that they don't care about us, but I think a lot of people really struggle with what to say and how to show up, and that can be really tricky. And if you're in grief and somebody is responding in this way that's not helpful, it can make you feel worse. You know, they might think they're offering up some really helpful advice, and it might just feel incredibly alienating and just really increase that grief. So I think something that's really special about nature is that it's always there, and we can tap into it anytime.
And without judgment too.
That's the other thing, is there's no outside energy aside. Like, there's the positive, you know, the natural energy of the world, but there's no outside judgment. There's no outside, people are messy, right? We just have a lot going on. So none of that's being brought in when you're with nature. And so I would just allow yourself, you know, to have the space that you need with it. And, you know, if you are out on the land, you know, whether that's your front porch looking at a tree, or, you know, at a sit spot or in a park, you know, you can look out and just see, like, what do you notice in front of you? You know, do you see, you know, your grief in nature? You know, what is it telling you? You could look and see, like, do you see comfort in nature? You know, just sit there with an open mind and see what, you know, what resonates and what maybe comes to you. I'm surprised a lot of times that I'm out and just these random thoughts will come, you know, from seeing. Basically what happens is our inner landscape gets projected onto the landscape in front of us. So a lot of times we can get some answers from that. And if you don't want to go outside, you know, if you have a pet, you know, pets are a great way of connecting with nature. You know, bath, taking a bath, lighting a candle, just giving that grief some space. Really just, you know, taking care of yourself. Like self-care, like, that is the biggest thing, but self-care can also come in the form of nature. And as you were asking that, the other thing that occurred to me was, you know, what happens when people, like at a funeral, you know, somebody dies, we bring flowers, right? We usually bring flowers or we bring food. And so traditionally food comes from the earth. I know not all of our food these days comes from the earth, but that's how we used to nurture people, right? Through food and through, you know, something that looks a little cheerful. So I think something living is really having something living around you that feels good to you when you're in grief can be really supportive.
I think that's beautiful advice. Thank you for sharing that.
And when those flowers do die, make sure we throw them out, you know, and we don't let them linger, because that can make us feel a little worse. But yeah, I think that can be really helpful for people.
And you've just touched briefly that you personally have experienced some childhood trauma, and I have this as well myself in my life. So how can creating a deeper connection to nature maybe help us start to process some of these experiences that we've been through if we have experienced trauma in our lives? And it's probably important to note that almost everyone to some degree has experienced trauma, right? So it doesn't have to be what's known as big T trauma, can be little T trauma, small things that have happened over and over again throughout our lives. That's another episode.
Yeah. Well, and I would say everybody at this point has gone through trauma because the pandemic itself has been traumatic, you know, and the upheaval that it's created. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I do think this is applicable to everybody. Of course, there's, like you said, the varying levels of trauma. For me, you know, that trip to the waterfall was incredibly healing and I didn't expect it. So I would say first and foremost, keep an open mind. But, you know, in addition to that, with trauma, when traumatic events get triggered in us, and, you know, sometimes it's not necessarily flashbacks like people think, but it could be, you know, some deep belief system that we have in our lives from, you know, repeated situations or messages. When those things get triggered, our nervous system actually starts reliving the trauma. So we're not actually in the present moment at that time. Our brains are actually existing in another time, in another place. Even if we think we know where we are, our nervous system is not here. And so nature can really help ground us. One way is, like I was talking about earlier, around, you know, it does calm the nervous system. So it can really help regulate the nervous system and get us out of that panic mode. It also can help us with what's called resourcing. I don't know if you're familiar with that term, but that's a way to basically bring us back to the present moment. So if we are having an experience that leads us to being outside of that window of tolerance for what we can handle for stress, you know, we start to get triggered and our emotions are now too much and maybe we're having a panic attack or flashbacks or we're crying and we just can't stop. What we basically need to do is we need to calm our nervous systems down and bring our prefrontal cortex back on. And so that's the front of our brain. So when we're in a trauma loop, we're most likely in the reptilian brain. And so we really need to bring that thinking part of our brain back. And that can be really hard. But one way to do that is, you know, you can find something in your room. If it's living, that's ideal. So maybe you can find a plant and start describing every detail about it that you can. You know, how big is it? What color is it? What texture is it? What do you find interesting about it? You know, describe this to somebody who can't see, like that kind of a mentality. And what that does is it brings your prefrontal cortex back on. So you're becoming more and more present. And eventually that emotional reaction will settle down. And you know, if it's a really big one, and I've done this myself, I can do that. And then like, oh, good, I calmed down. I can shift back, you know, and it might come right back up. So I'll kind of do that exercise again until I can really settle. Sometimes that can be really hard to do for ourselves if we're really elevated. But if we have the awareness, that can be helpful. One thing I work with clients who I know have a history of trauma, we start with creating a list of resources that they can use. So they could be internal resources, external resources, spiritual resources. And then they have this concrete list. So if they end up really overwhelmed emotionally, they can go to this list and they can go, okay, so none of my people are available. So I can't do that. Okay. I can take a bath. I could make a nice hot cup of tea. I could go hug my dog. I could go for a walk outside, you know, and so you start having this list of things to calm that nervous system. Because once we're in it, you can't remember the mm-hmm. things that will help.
This is very true. Yeah.
So that's what I've noticed about nature. You know, the biggest one being how it really does settle the nervous system, but there are other ways you can use it as well. And then from a more of a coaching standpoint, you know, looking at the land and seeing, you know, what am I noticing? You know, and as you notice things, you'll start to get these messages and these ahas of, oh, it's not this, it's actually this. This is what my belief, you know, I've had this belief, but this is actually the truth. And I've had a lot of those. And it's hard without specific examples, but it, you know, just over time, you get these little pieces and you start to kind of feel what's you and what's not you. And you'll start to realize some of the things that have kind of been imposed into our systems or into our minds from these traumatic events or messages or whatever.
We can start to, definitely. I would, for myself, I would say it's kind of, we can start to let go of the stories that we've been told about ourselves, right? The stories that we've told about who we are, who we're supposed to be, how we're supposed to behave, what we're supposed to feel, not feel, and all
or
of these
how
things.
The world is.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And so rewriting our stories from our truth.
Absolutely. And, you know, that goes back to that projection thing that we were talking about before, right? Is that inner landscape gets projected out there and we can see it, but you can see it in such a gentle way that you're figuring it out versus, you know, when we're around people a lot, those things can get projected onto people, but that's really messy because they have their own projections going on and there's all these other dynamics and it's really hard to sift through. But with nature, it just, you know, it just is. And, you know, another thing to share about the nature connection piece is, you know, our energy when we're out there impacts nature. So if we have a unique experience with some sort of live creature coming into our space while we're sitting, it generally means something because they generally won't come near us unless they want to be seen. And so if you get that feeling of like, wow, I just saw this thing that's not normal, you know, it's because nature's feeling our energy and things aren't going to come in to our space unless there's some sort of resonance. And that's where it can start to get a little woo-woo for some people, but starting to look up like what those messages could be. And you can look up traditionally, what do they mean? Or you could just ask yourself, like, what does it mean that a deer walked through my sit spot today and just hung out with me for 10 minutes? You know, what does that mean to me? And just that things will start to open up in you that, you know, if you just don't look for it, right? Because if we're trying to look for it, then it's going to feel like work and it's not going to come. But if we're just open, you'll just hear these little flashes of things. It's even having done this for a while now, it still shocks me and blows my mind every time, but it can be really powerful if we hold that open mind.
So based on what you've just said, I have a question for you. When we're out in nature, is there a way for us to be? So this is coming from, you know, I live in the Pacific Northwest and I was never really an outdoor person before we moved here, but we started to do some hiking and get outdoors and things like that. And I see the differences in people when they're out in, you know, hiking a trail, right? So there's people that are just, they're so focused on getting to the top or getting to the end. They're like racing by. Right. Mm-hmm. Whereas I'm a little bit more, you know, I'm slower, you know, I'm also short, so I have little legs, so I walk slower, but you know, so I'm kind of looking around and just kind of seeing things. And I see these other people that are racing. So is there a right way or a wrong way, for lack of a better term, to kind of be out in nature?
So I think it depends on what your intentions are. I don't want to say that it's wrong to be just like speeding through, you know, if somebody's running up a hill because it's part of their fitness routine, you know, that has different implications than somebody who's going out and trying to connect. But there definitely is an impact. So when we just kind of plow out there, the natural world feels it. And there's, John Young does a lot of work with bird language. And so if you start looking at bird language, you know, the way they, if you just kind of plow out there, all the birds are just going to fly off. And they actually, if you tune into the birds, it actually tells you, they can tell you where predators are. And I haven't mastered this stuff yet. I find it really fascinating, but you can get so much information from them. And so if you're disturbing the birds, you're definitely disturbing everything else. And so having that mindfulness, you know, the quieter and softer we walk, the less impact we're having. But I would also say that, you know, also keep that in mind for what you're looking for out there. If you do not want to see wildlife, and this doesn't mean you won't see it, but you know, don't be walking with the softest, most silent step, you know, very slow, because you're going to sneak up on something probably, right? And so finding a balance of, you know, if you are, especially by yourself, you know, you might want to be loud enough that you're not going to spook something that could be potentially dangerous. Here, you know, our bears, they're more scared of us, you know, and they run off, but that's different out west, you know, where there's grizzlies. So just, you know what you have for wildlife and what kind of an impact you need for safety. But if you're trying to be out there in a completely undisturbed natural environment, then the softer you can walk, and the quieter you can be and the slower you move, the less impact you'll have. And also that's on the ground too, right? So you'll see on trails, the human impact of the earth, right? So the softer we walk also, you know, the better, for the earth. But, you know, also I know that sometimes when we say that stuff, it can be taken to an extreme. And so I also don't want people being scared to walk on the earth, right? So just finding that balance.
That's great advice. Yeah. I was always kind of interested about that. I just feel fascinated that, you know, they must really have somewhere that they need to be. And it's just interesting, yeah, the different, you know, perspectives, right? The reason, yeah, why maybe, you know, I'm out there versus why somebody else might be out there. So.
And honestly, that's why when I go out, I try to go to the most remote place I can, because I don't want to deal with that stuff, because it's so disruptive. It's also disruptive to me. It's really jarring. Or I've also been on trails that are more frequented and, had, you know, it's usually teenagers, but sometimes it's adults who are playing music on a speaker going through the woods. And it's like, I'm out here cause I want to hear the birds. I want to hear, you know, the trees and the wind. And if I wanted to listen to music, I would stay, you know, at home or my car or whatever and listen to music. So I think just, you know, knowing what you're seeking, is a big part of that.
Yeah, no, that's all so helpful. What's an important lesson that you've learned on your journey as an HSP that you think other HSPs can learn from?
So I think my favorite lesson that I've learned is that we treat others how to treat us. We teach others how to treat us. So, you know, the way we treat ourselves and the way we hold our boundaries is it's how we teach others how to treat us. And I know that, you know, sometimes that learning the boundaries for HSPs can be challenging because we don't want to upset people. We want to help people, but not everybody is respectful of our needs. And so, you know, if we're not appreciating our sensitivity and what that does for us, or we're not being really mindful of what our needs are to recharge, and we're not prioritizing that stuff, then other people aren't either. And they're going to treat us like crap. They're going to walk all over us. But if we value those things about ourselves, then it's really a non-negotiable for others. They can choose not to value that, but if I'm valuing those things, I'm not going to have those people in my space. And yes, I think that was when I heard that line, you know, we teach others how to treat us. That really for me was just one of those moments of,
just a revelation.
I'd heard all these things before, right? But putting it that way, I was like, oh, okay. It all clicked.
Yeah. And especially going back to, you know, like we were saying, the stories that we're taught about who we are, what we need, what we deserve, mm-hmm, right? And so, yeah, that all comes together.
And I am, you know, people who are the people close to me, I don't share this with just anybody, but you know, I am very boundaried about my sensitivity now from the place of, you know, it took me a long time to understand. I understood the gifts of it, right? That people really enjoy the presence of an HSP when they're struggling, right? Because we're so in tune and empathetic and it makes them feel good. And we have that deep processing. So we're good at helping them solve the problem or feel better. But then simultaneously, you know, I'm needing to recharge and they don't want me to have downtime, or they're upset because I'm being too sensitive and, you know, having an emotional reaction to something. And once I learned that those things are opposite sides of the same coin and really they're a package deal, that became huge for me in setting those boundaries, because now I will not let people use my gifts to feel good about themselves while discrediting me and making me feel bad about myself because of the other side of that. So really holding, you know, that understanding, and I try to teach people about it when there's something that happens, but it's not something I'm willing to negotiate anymore, really, right? So, and then so teaching others that, you know, like, this is how it is, and this is what's acceptable to me. Still in a kind way, right? But not negotiating it.
That is fantastic. I think we could all implement that into our lives. And I am going to do that for myself actually as well. So,
and I'm not to say that I'm perfect at it by any means.
It's no, we're all a work in progress. You know, we're all a work in progress. We all learn something new every day about ourselves, about the world. So, but no, that's a great way to look at it and to see that it is two sides of one gift.
Exactly. You cannot have one without the other, because it's those very things that give us the ability to show up in this way. But that also means we have to refill. It means, since it is, you know, not everybody has this that they're able to tap into, you know, it's exhausting. It takes, you know, we only have so much energy, which means we also really have to rest and take good care of ourselves.
So Amber, what are you working on now? Can you tell us a little bit more about where people can find you and find out more about all of these wonderful things that you offer?
Yeah. So in addition to my private coaching that I do, I have a series. It's a seasonal series of workshops. So just about every month I'm having a workshop, and it's based around the seasons. And so it's all about learning from, you know, the energy of the season, really taking in the wisdom that nature has for us. So just taking some time to slow down, tune into that wisdom, and then integrate it into our lives for that season. So we're not working against the energy. We're so, as HSPs, we're so sensitive to the energy around us. So if we can embrace the season, even if we don't particularly like the one that we're in or heading into, we can really learn a lot from it and help support ourselves. So I have one coming up February 1st, which is called, it's not really a season as we think of seasons, but between winter and spring, there's like a sub season called thaw. So we'll have that. And then on March 20th, it's the spring equinox. So I'll have another one specifically for spring. And there's more information for those on my website. And so my website is www.soulful-nature.com, and it's soulful, S-O-U-L-F-U-L, -nature.com. And on my website, I also have a few free resources. So there's the ebook that you can download that tells you about that practice of sit spot and how you can work that into your daily life. And there's also the worksheet for the nature connection indoors. So that way you can, if you don't want to get out, or if you live someplace where you can't seasonally, that's a great resource for you. You can follow me on Instagram, which is @soulful_nature_official. I have a private Facebook group, which you're more than welcome to jump into, which is Soulful Nature Community. And you can find that at facebook.com/groups/soulfulnature. And if all else fails, you can email me at amber@soulful-nature.com. And can we put those in the show notes for them? So that way,
yes, we'll have all the resources where you can reach Amber and all about her work in the show notes for sure.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Amber. It was such a pleasure to talk to you. It's really, I think, wonderful. And like I said before, fascinating work that you're doing. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to be interested in it.
Thank you. It was an honor to be here. I hope this has helped other HSPs, because I know it's a tough world for us. You know, we've got to learn unique ways to take care of ourselves.
I have no doubt. Thanks, Amber.
All right. Thank you so much. Take care.
Amber really is a wonderful example of an HSP who has found a way to tune into her gift and share it with others. She really is on a mission to empower highly sensitive people with radical self-acceptance and self-love. If you're interested in learning more about Amber and her work, of course, you'll find links in the show notes. If you enjoy the Highly Sensitive Healing Podcast, please head over to iTunes and give it a quick review and share it with friends. It only takes a couple of minutes and it will be so deeply appreciated. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any of the good stuff. And I'll see you next time. Thank you so much for spending time with me here on the Highly Sensitive Healing Podcast. New episodes are released Wednesdays, and please feel free to reach out with any questions or comments. And never forget, we were given this highly sensitive life because we're strong enough to live it.